Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Jasper here from Outlier Ventures, and he's going to tell you a little bit about them and also some of their projects regarding real-world assets and tokenization. So, thank you so much for being here, Jasper.
Thanks for having me. Very, very excited to be here.
Do you think, just to get started, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe how you got interested in crypto, and then a little bit about Outlier Ventures specifically?
Yeah, sure. So, been looking at cryptocurrency since 2017, I think. So 2 cycles ago, got basically pulled in. I have a background in traditional finance, so I spent time on sales and trading floors. That's actually how I got excited, because cryptocurrency back then was the only asset we could trade freely. So obviously, like, taking investment exposure there. Then once, I think 2017 calmed down, we went into 2018 and the bear market there. I just looked at the technology and, like, the actual assets I owned in portfolio, which I never really took the time. It's difficult during a bull market, everyone gets pulled in. And then ever since, followed the space very closely. With my traditional background, I think the most exciting period for me was the DeFi summer, really seeing, like, how P2P trading could come to life. And then I transitioned from more a TradFi into, like, digital assets from a career perspective in 21, 22, where I did at a bank the research position in digital assets, sort of the digital assets from a financial perspective, and then ultimately moved to Outlier. So currently, my role entails looking at, like, top down, we do a lot of thesis formation. So these theses form the backbone for the cohorts we run, so for the accelerator programs. And that's ultimately a result of spending a lot of time looking at grassroots ecosystems. So looking at what's going on, speaking with founders, and then from there, we form a thesis around what we think will be hot in the space over the next 12 to 18 months, basically. So that's a little bit in a nutshell.
So, could you maybe tell us what some of those theses are and how you might come to those, what you decide to explore and how you decide which ones to explore more deeply?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's very organic in a way. A lot of it is through spending time, like, looking at the ecosystem, seeing where the narrative picks up. We obviously, in consensus with, like, the organization, then decides, like, what we want to run programs on. A lot of the thinking is around, is the ecosystem mature enough, or is it, like, in the right stage for us to have a meaningful impact? I think some of the big ones we've called out over the past half year, like past few months to half year, is Bitcoin. Obviously, was, I think, the first one where we properly did, like, a thematic one. That's where we looked at obviously inscriptions and BRC20s, and we drew the parallel between that and the Ethereum ecosystem. That's playing exactly out as we hoped it would be, and we're currently running a Bitcoin program, so that was a great one. And then some of the other stuff going into 24 and 25, the next cycle, I think, is obviously RWAs will be big, something I think people in the space who's paid attention to the space in the past are familiar with. But now there's an inflection point there. Another big one coming up is the intersection between AI and blockchain, where you'll have both technologies actually converging into one tech stack in order to solve the structural issues with each individual technology. And then another one, I think, is obviously DeepIn. So we've seen last cycle where DeepIn was about digital infrastructure. And now, increasingly, if you look at DeepIn, so for the people not familiar, it's decentralized physical infrastructure. If you look at the projects there, a lot of it has shifted towards data collection. So from the prov instead of the provision of digital services, we're now moving in an era of data collection, but also social platform coordination. So these are your Uber, Airbnb type of Web3-based projects. So that's in a nutshell, like, some of the stuff that keeps me busy on my day-to-day. These are some of the projects, but obviously there's other teams, smaller teams like ZK, for example, which continue to be very attractive for us.
I think those are all actually really great spaces to be in. Those are all things I definitely believe in. I think you're really smart to be following the BRCs and comparing it against the ETH stuff. Not a lot of people were willing to take a good look at that in the last 6 months that I've talked to. And I think, you guys are probably playing out a similar thesis to what I was imagining. And I think, looking into these systems where we can create decentralized infrastructure as alternatives to some of these mainstream platforms. I worked with a company called Arcade City back in Austin in 2016 that were trying to do like a decentralized Uber, but it was frankly just too early, and they had a lot of trouble getting off the ground. But I think a lot of the work that they did, it made sense. It worked. It was a system that actually benefited the riders and the drivers and made them more money. They just didn't have the insane amount of, venture capital funding that, the others had to get them off the ground. So I think now there might be a wave of that funding from companies like you guys who help those guys actually have a fair shot at showing people it can work. So I think that's exciting. So are there certain things that, in particular to the last sort of bucket, which is the real world asset tokenization, are there any things that have changed recently that have made that thesis more possible? Or is it really just a matter of timing and people being ready for it?
Yeah, it is like that's a big part of defining whether or not we should commit to the space as well, right? I think your previous example around Web3 based ride hailing, there are some building blocks which need to fall in place. Like obviously you have infrastructure there, potential governance as well, or like how the social coordination is going to happen. Like on your example, that's very important. I think the building blocks we've identified for RWA, they are actually threefold. So there's three big drivers here which we believe have changed in a meaningful way, which unlocks like the acceleration of the space. I think the first one is very obvious that there's an increased mind share and activity, and that's not only from the crypto native community, but from the broader like more corporate institutionalized community as well. So if you look at the space, it's definitely the financial industry which is pushing this forward. From tier one and tier two banks, you have meaningful headlines coming from where like there's partnerships with the likes of Avalanche, some other alt L1s, even exploration of EVM based tokenization products. Also, for example, like SocGen worked with MakerDAO. So there's meaningful partnerships there. And obviously, like the mind share and activity is very self-fulfilling in a way, right? Like more people, more resources, ultimately driving this forward. The second big one is, I think, the technology and the developer tooling. The technology has like drastically improved, obviously, like now we're in the era of L2s. Obviously a couple of Ethereum forks later, so like on the scalability side of things, like it's definitely looking good, and that needs to continue to come down in order for us to have like very efficient tokenization and the ability to migrate already very efficient systems onto an even more efficient database, because that's the idea, right? Is if you look at what tokenization is, it's migration from a central database to a decentralized database. So if you want to attract like very efficient existing systems, like the equity market, for example, you need to be at least equally as efficient to mitigate some of the payoffs of actually moving. So technology is there. Dev tooling has also seen a significant improvement, which just again lowers barriers to entry. People who are not hardcore into like the dev ecosystem can also build out or express their views in terms of like building out a company. So that's very important for us. And then the last thing I think is the legal and regulatory clarity. This is obviously a critical piece because if you look at RWAs, it is a quite unique space. In order to have mass adoption here, you need the holders of large asset pools to also jump into the space. And this, like, if you look at who holds assets across all the industries, these are existing regulated entities, right? Like these are more big corporates with large asset pools. They will only move if there's regulatory and legal clarity. And this, I think, apart from the US, is definitely coming online. We have MiCA coming online in December of this year in Europe. The UK is also doing improvements in terms of forming regulatory framework there. So I think these three things, so more mindshare, tech, and regulatory clarity are driving the space forward, we think.
I like what you said about the big institutions starting to shift their weight a little bit. I think that it, from what I'm hearing, seems to be a big part of the equation for a lot of these companies. I'm hearing a lot more people say, we're going to start tokenizing treasuries. We're going to start tokenizing corporate debt. We're going to start tokenizing the holdings of like diamonds and gold and things that I've been hearing for years, but much more serious people starting to say them and starting to float much bigger corporate entity names than I would have ever imagined. My question is, how do you find the winners and losers in a space like that? Are you looking for the people who have the right relationships, who knows the, you know, the Jamie Dimon of, you know, Chase Bank, or is it someone who just has a really sophisticated view on the technology and a really good go-to-market strategy in countries where you feel like the regulation is ready, I guess? There's so many players I see entering the space. I have a really hard time figuring out who's actually going to take the market share. And I'm not sure, I guess, if it's going to be a sort of winner take all system. So I was curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's the billion dollar question, really. I think given the fact that you will need to deal with a lot of regulatory changes and navigating that landscape, I think we're looking for founders that have that are pretty agile and like have the ability to pivot quite quickly, because that's something we've seen in the space already. Like if you look at the narrative in 2017, it was very much around this B2C approach where marketplaces came online, tokenizing like luxury goods, watches, real estate. Like that was really the narrative in 2017. And there was not really a product market fit back then. Like the tech was still not efficient enough. And overall, like there was like lower than expected uptake or desire from the retail investors who like the product was oriented towards, right? We've seen a big pivot from like that specific type of business model, which I think is still perfectly viable, but it was just not the right timing back then. But we've seen a strong pivot from that to like more white label B2B solutions. So where, for example, now a lot of tokenization providers are experts around SPV structuring, have regulatory licenses, and offer like a white label solution for anyone that wants to enter the space. So this is more like your B2B or your B2B2C type of model. So the ability to pivot, I think, in this space, which it will be a multi-decade trend. Like ultimately, we have been digitizing everything for the past few decades. Now we're just doing this on blockchain, so it's a continuous trend. So the ability to pivot there across like different business models is quite important. In terms of what the right model is, I think it's very difficult. I'm in the camp where I think monolithic solutions for RWA make a lot of sense, because you have so many different things to deal with. And with monolithic, I mean like one platform, which is a one-stop shop. So you have like the ability to have like to comply with regulation, the ability to put stuff on blockchain in a very smart way, maybe like cross-chain interoperability, and then also like cross assets. So I think if you have this one-stop shop, it allows you to be very nimble in terms of like navigating what will be tokenized first. And then secondly, also like I think you can create something which is from a regulatory perspective very sound, which is ultimately still like the number one goal, right? So that's the big question, is like which assets are going to be tokenized first? That's the big question.
That was actually going to be my next question. Was going to be, are there certain assets that you think are, you know, the low hanging fruit? Is it way easier to do gold than a treasury? I'd imagine, but just have you, you know, found any of that in your research, and do you have any projections?
Yeah. I think so. There's two angles to look at this. Obviously, so the first one is from an opportunity cost of moving from your existing data infrastructure onto blockchain. So I think there the rule of thumb is that the more efficient systems will move later. So the ones that are already operating in a very efficient setting, for them it is less attractive to move onto blockchain, unless fundamentally something can change to their business model. And the reason why I say this is because payments, for example, if you move on to blockchain, it's possible something fundamentally changes to your business model, despite payments already being hyper-efficient. Like payments is a very efficient space. Like if you look at incumbents, they operate on super like slim margins. It's efficient, but the business model structurally changes. But if you look at, for example, equity markets, it is very efficient. And it is difficult to make a business case where on blockchain it would be even more efficient. I think the technology still needs to ramp up to the point where it's at like the costs of settling a transaction are at a fraction of what they are today. Like they can't be cents on the dollars. You're talking about like whatever, a thousandth or like a hundred thousandths of a cent in order to settle a transaction to deal with the high frequency, right? So I think that's one thing. The second idea in terms of adoption, I think, varies with the tangible or intangible assets. Intangible assets are naturally easier to tokenize because you don't deal with the Oracle problem, right? Which is this, as long as tokenization has been a thing, the Oracle problem is like one of the big challenges. And for those who are not aware, it's like, how do you make sure that the assets that is represented in the real world reflects the digital copy? And in case you have a digital copy after tokenizing, how do you make sure that that digital copy still represents what the physical state of the real assets, right? So that's a difficulty with tangible assets. So on the intangible side, I think stuff like data, intellectual property, royalties, like that's stuff where you will have very quick adoption of tokenization. Like that, I think naturally because of the ability to execute like complex contracts to smart via smart contracts, basically, that's just a killer app. Like that's a very there's already a strong product market fit for that specifically. So, data, IP, and royalties, and anything on the creator economy side, I think is pretty strong for RWAs.
Yep, I definitely believe that. My co-founder runs ShopX, and they do loyalty rewards and help token gate for e-commerce, and they're doing really well. And they've done some of the best job, I think, of breaking into mainstream companies, like partnerships with like Fox and a bunch of really large companies that are using this for customers who don't really have much experience with it. And so as I've followed these things, I've noticed everyone really wants to hit physical assets. They all want to do diamonds, they all want to do gold, they all want to do precious metals of some sort. But they all seem to run into pretty hefty roadblocks. The distributors, the suppliers, they don't really want the system to be put in place, and a lot of them are kind of shady, and they're trying to figure out some other way to like move money around or do something. And so I've never seen it actually work, and I've seen probably 10 people try, and a lot of them who've been on this podcast. Interesting. Yeah. Have you noticed anything with the people who have tried? Are there any roadblocks they specifically run into that tend to kill the company when they try to tokenize a physical asset like diamonds or real estate even?
No, I think there's two, like the two biggest ones is obviously like the inability to navigate the regulatory landscape, which I think is underappreciated by many. Like obviously, if you want to find adoption, like you need to be able to structure SPVs or at least have. So I think legal expertise is extremely valuable in RWA. So if you, for anyone, maybe this is a call to action for anyone with a legal background listening to this, there is a strong desire for like projects building in RWA to onboard like legal expertise. Like navigating the regulatory landscape is very critical. And then second, I think is what happens, and this is not only with RWA, but this is more in general, is like builders come up with this really great idea to use blockchain technology to tackle an existing issue. Then as they continue to build, they slightly lose touch with their end markets. And then they end up building a product which has a very narrow fit. So like, I think being quite agile and iterative around how you like the economics or how you develop the platform, like that, I think is a key message for anyone building in the space. Like connect with the asset holders, connect with the ones you actually want to tokenize, connect with both sides of the market. Because if you have a marketplace, you're creating a marketplace, you need sustained demand from the supply and the demands. You need sustained desire to trade from the supply and the demand side. So like be in touch with both and understand like what issue are you trying to tackle here. It's very important. Very important, I would say.
Yep, that makes perfect sense to me. I would almost say, though, in my experience, it's been, yeah, somewhat the opposite, where they've tried to tackle just every type of real-world asset tokenization at the same time. And in doing so, they don't have a really specific honed-in tech stack and regulatory mindset on any single one. So I think, you know, it can go both ways. But I guess if you were one of these companies coming to you guys to join your accelerator, you know, how would you support them? What does that involve? What was the idea behind the accelerator? I guess, was there something in particular you guys felt like you could help these companies with?
Yeah, so we've been doing acceleration for like the better half of a decade now. So like we're very experienced in terms of, I think we've run close to 40 cohorts. And in the past cohorts, naturally, we came across projects that did RWAs, that were involved in RWAs in every shape or form. And now I feel like, because the points we previously mentioned, this potential inflection point in terms of adoption, institutions stepping in, we feel like a dedicated RWA program is like the time is ripe to really, really hone in on this space. We think it's mature enough. In terms of how we structure these programs, so we... like when companies or like when projects come online through the 12-week program, we bolster them with expertise, both in-house and external. So your external expertise is our mentor pool. I think whatever, close to over 500 mentors at least. Mentor pools from different backgrounds. You have like successful founders, you have VC, you have corporates, you have thought leaders in the space, potentially academic people as well. So everyone gets involved on that side. And then internally, we bolster them with capabilities around legal, tech, marketing, go-to-market. It very much depends on the needs of the company. So like obviously, when before coming into the program, there's screening, there's conversations. And then we identify how would we be able to add value. And that needs to be very clear for us. It's like, we need to have the feeling that like when they come online, we are in a very good position to help them. Something else we do, potentially also applicable to RWA programs, is token engineering. So we have like a very strong token engineering team in-house. We run scenarios. We can help with potential token listing as well. So this is on the utility token side, obviously, but that's all stuff we do in-house. So delivering the full package, really.
Yeah, that's you've got a lot of companies through your cohorts. That's really cool. So how do you go about selecting these companies? Are they mostly inbound applications? Do you go out and scout people out? Do you guys have like a big enough brand where you feel like people just know about you? Or has it been sort of tough to find the right companies to get into this cohort?
It's a healthy blend of all, which I'm very happy to say. With RWA one specifically, the initial reception, so we've had the program live, or at least like the applications open, which will be open until like the beginning of April. But we've had a very, very good inflow of projects who all of like and founders who are very excited. But apart from the obvious inbounds, like we also spend a lot of time going to conferences, going to hackathons, and speaking with the very early stage ecosystem, and just with founders in general, creating a little bit of an awareness around the program we do, because they might not always like look at accelerators, or they might have never considered an accelerator in the first place. I think a lot of people are either doing the traditional bootstrap or they're trying to push directly into pre-seeds. But like pushing directly into pre-seed is not as easy as I think a lot of founders deem it to be. Like you already need to have like an MVP at least, or show like very strong vision in order for you to convince venture to like cornerstone deals and all that stuff. So for the preparation, that's where we can definitely help. Like we are this intermediate step between like idea formation and POC. And then on the other side, like your pre-stage, your pre-seed capital raise. So that's where we sit. I love spending time on the ecosystem, obviously. I think that's where the true alpha sits. And that's where like you see like an abundance of passion from the builders in terms of like the the problems they're solving. So that's also like, that's obviously naturally just where I gravitate to, is speaking with just founders on the ground, on Telegram, on X, like anywhere I can get into a conversation.
Yeah, no, that's, I love to do that too. I think that's where a lot of the value is. And I think it's tough, and founders don't have a lot of great resources, especially in crypto. There's a lot of, you know, charlatans. You don't want to just follow the influencers. They're not going to be, you know, your mentors necessarily. So there needs to be some of that infrastructure built out. And I think just in my recent experience, the fundraising environment has required more and more either proof of traction, or they want the product further along than they've ever wanted it. There's a lot less value in can you build it, and a lot more value in can you get people to use it, and can you get some interest from the market. And so I think having some resources to help people out on that side is really valuable. Yeah. Do you guys do your accelerator like in person? Is it remote? Do you guys take equity from your cohort? How did you guys decide to structure it, and why did you make some of those decisions?
Yeah, definitely. So we used to run in person, and then obviously with the pandemic, ever since we've done fully remote, there's ideation around, should we pull this back into like specific things in person, like demo days, for example. Mm-hmm. But in its current state, and the RWA is one, is fully remote. There's pro and cons to all of this. Like, I think the pro is you can funnel the best talent into the cohort, and you can surround the cohort with the best talent as well. So like in terms of mentors, like that's where you really go global and just look at like what is the ideal fit to surround these companies with. So like there's definitely the benefit there in terms of how we engage with the companies. So it is quite standard, but obviously like as we get through like the later stages of potential applications, there's a negotiation phase to all of this. But normally we look at 6% equity / future tokens, like a true SEFT and token warrants, in return for like the entire program. So moving through the entire program, that varies obviously according to the how like developed the company itself is, what stage they are at, stages of the market. So like very much depending on like the potential valuation of everything, like this moves, right? Because coming at it with a very static number is doesn't leave much to the imagination. So but yeah, that's a little bit how we structure these programs,
you know, more honed into their.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think looking at, and we already have a little bit of a track record because it's been like a year and a half ago, like looking at our cohort in 22, there was a high degree of passion. Like the people who were building after, like, obviously, like we had 3IC, FTX, like the entire collapse, like the people building there were super hardcore. Like it was very obvious to them that's like raising capital in that environment was going to be extremely difficult, because like the existing players in the VC space were either over allocated or did no longer exist, and the generalists were basically like pulling their hands off. So they went through more of like a bootstrapping phase, and I think they've earned their stripes. Like they've properly built through the bear market. I think now, like when the market is warming up, like we see continued excitement. Like that's, I think excitement is one of the factors which is consistent across the market, because that is what makes good founders, right? Like it's the excitement and the true desire to like solve this issue. So that's something we've seen across Bull and Bear. But just like, yeah, like from being very realistic around like how quickly can we like grow this company, like obviously like the sentiment is different, right? I'm very curious to see like Bear versus Bull versus Bear versus Bull. I haven't done the exercise, but looking at like how they raised, the success rate, like all that stuff, I think it nets some pretty interesting metrics.
I definitely noticed it just on this podcast alone. It gets very different between the two, and you get the really passionate people in the bear market who are the true believers, who really know why they're doing it. They understand the problem they're solving to a T. Like there's no, you know, iffiness about what they're doing because they're experienced and they're putting everything on the line to do it. So I feel like if I was an investor, I would try to hit those guys. But they it's yeah. sad because they just never have any money. But if they can survive it, those are the guys who nothing is going to take them down.
So. It is true. I think the best ones now, you're trying like the really great projects now are the ones that are just went in stealth since 21, 22, or the ones that like never really posted stuff. And all of a sudden, market's warming up and they come out with this massive roadmap or like this killer headline of like, for example, on RWA, like we, over the next year, we're going to onboard like X million of assets, or we have contracts and partnerships with X, Y, Z. And like they didn't, because up until a year ago, there was no real reason to disclose these because the market would barely move because we were just in this hibernating stage, right? So these are the ones they've been building like relentlessly for the past few years, and now they're coming out with headlines. I think that's the ones you need to pay close attention to, because a lot of them, like a lot of those type of projects, I think will shape the next cycle, basically.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. I will say one thing that is interesting, though, is I've noticed a lot of those founders, they get used to some of the positives of the bear market, where it's a lot easier for them to get publicity, for example. There are not that many people doing things, so they can get on a lot more podcasts more easily. They can get media appearances more easily, so they can get the word out and differentiate themselves at a level that's much more difficult when everyone is flush with cash and competing for the same media space. So are there any suggestions you would make for, you know, some of these companies as to how they actually get the word out if they do have technology? Because I feel like in crypto, there's just this huge dichotomy between the marketers and the builders, and the marketers tend to have crap products and the builders tend to have no ability to get the word out. So how do you fix that gap?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think to finish your point around the bear market, that's also something is like, in the bear market, the discussion very much like defaults back into like the more academic, technological, skewed conversation. While in the bull market, like a lot of it is basically like shilling and marketing is like really pushing the narrative ultimately, like from a very high level. So it goes like high level in the bull market, and then it goes like very detailed, like very principle level type of talking in the bear market. In terms of success, like it's very important, and we've seen this time and time again with the founders we work with, to bridge the gap between your idea, which is very technical in a way, and like your end market. It's like not necessarily narrative to a point where like marketing is important, but having the ability to really distill it down into like, what are you building? Why does it matter? And why do people need to care? Is very important. And I feel like if you pin that down, you'll be golden, because a lot of the time there's like either very good storytellers with actually like not necessarily that much product to go off on, or you have these extremely like solid builders who are building like this great product, but with the inability to truly convey why it matters. And bridging the gap between both is very critical. And a lot of the time, like, even on both sides, there's, because they've been like heads down for so long, they don't really appreciate it. So that's also something valuable, is like, we'll just give honest feedback and we'll say like, man, your product is great, but frankly, if you pitch this to anyone that's not a crypto power user, you lose them in the second. Like, it is impossible for people to understand. So making that progress is very important. It's like, again, like, I also still, I, this is my personal opinion, but I believe in general, just more broadly, like crypto needs to stop selling the tech. We need to stop selling like, I'm doing my TPS is X or I'm doing Y. It's like, no, like, why is your TPS? Like, what's the purpose of your quick transition, like your quick transaction speed? Like, we need to explain like the why behind the tech. Yep. And that's, I think, something which will become more important, especially as generalists VCs are entering the market. Because if you think about it, like, there's a lot of crypto dedicated funds, but also more tech generalists like fintech funds, health tech funds, all these, as blockchain diffuses across different industries through like tokenization, all of a sudden these will also start looking at the technology. And as a founder, if you then have the ability to easily distill something into the adjustable language, which they can process into their IC, you're fine. Like you'll be set, I think.
Yep, I've been doing this for, 10 years, and I'll still read these guys' description of what their product does, and then I'll just go use the thing, and it'll be like, okay, it's like, it would have taken me 2 seconds to describe that the fees are cheaper, it's slightly faster, it solves these few small problems, it's a little more private, and the way they go about it, it blocks out anyone who isn't a hardcore developer already, who isn't, and that's how the industry started, was with these guys. I used to go to the Ethereum meetups in Austin, and you couldn't understand a word those guys were saying back in 2015 or 2016. And so it was always I feel like the industry was kind of built around this high technology, highbrow, super sophisticated technology sort of baseline, but to bring the average person in. And I think developers do this across every industry I've worked in, big data, AI, they love to use big words, make people feel a little dumber than they should. But at the end of the day, it's not doing you a lot of favors. And I think people need to really just dilute it down for the average person as much as possible, which is what I try to do with this podcast for the most part.
Yeah.
Are there any, other sort of areas in the space aside from RWAs that you personally are really bullish on, whether that's BRC20s or DeFi through Solana or whatever else that might be?
I think now is the time to be bullish. We're in the cycle reset anyway. There's a lot of stuff happening. So I think there's a lot of interesting pockets. One that's piqued my interest more recently is the intersection between AI and blockchain. And I think it is because for example, at OV, we've been theorizing about this since, I think, 2016. We called it the convergence stack. And it was this idea of because fundamentally both technologies are dealing with data, they will converge into one, right? Like AI is value extraction and blockchain is storage of data. So that was the idea. But I think what is changing now is there is a necessity for these technologies to come online. Previously, it was we'll just get a better tech stack. So okay, but now there's a sense of urgency, because if you look at what's happening is billions of users are adopting generative AI. Ever since November 22, when ChatGPT came online, we've seen the quickest adoption curve of any tech platform in history. I can't remember how quickly they went to a billion users, but it was quick. It was as vertical as you can go on an axis, basically. So with this also come the realization of the limitations of this technology. And AI is limited in data privacy, data security. There's also difficulties with the authenticity of assets generated by this technology. So a lot of people are looking at regulation as a potential solution, but there's two things here. Is regulation even possible here? Is it even possible to capture or contain the entire thing? And if that's possible, how damaging will it be for innovation? So I think looking at blockchain and a potential tech solution there, where you would have blockchain sitting underneath AI as this data providence, data governance, data security enhancing database is very interesting. And now, for example, deepfakes is top of mind for regulators going into a very election heavy year. We have elections in the US, we have elections in Europe, basically anywhere, there's big elections. Mm-hmm. So stuff like deepfake will be top of mind. If you then can present technological solution to this issue, I think you'll have a lot of uptake. So I think the potential there is really big. Obviously, we're scratching the surface with this area. I've done some mapping, spent some time on it. We've launched a program on this as well. So it is dedicated, we're going full on with this just because there's so much to tackle here. But that's where I'm spending a lot of my time these days. I think it's a super interesting space as well.
I couldn't agree more. I think you're right on track with that one, and I'm working on a lot of that stuff too. So I think super interesting space to be in. But that's all the questions I have for you. Thank you so much for coming on today. If you have anything you'd like to plug, any websites or social media pages, feel free to go to do that right now.
Yeah, so maybe just quickly. So for the people who are not familiar, just go to our website. I think it's www.outlierventures.io. All the stuff around our base camps are there. For the founders building in AI or RWAs, and if you have any questions that's not answered on the website, just hit me up on LinkedIn or on Twitter, like X, whatever. And very happy to engage in any conversation there. So like, just reach out if there's any questions. And for you, man, thanks for having me. And thanks for the great conversation.
Anytime. We'll get you back on soon. Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you guys for listening. We'll be back with a new episode soon.